Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin, and you know our favorite topic on this show is passive income streams. And even as you wonder how far would the Fed go with Fed rate hikes this year, you may be wondering at the back of your head, is it time for me to look into expanding my portfolio of dividend stocks, or can I afford to take more risks in this market at this point in time? Today, we ask our guests to share some strategies on dividend investing in 2023 with examples. We can't wait to dive into them with Tim Phillips, Head of Content and Investment Lead for Prosper Us CGSCIMB Securities. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Michelle. How are you doing?
Good, really good. Good to see you again. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. I'm excited about today's topic. I'm a massive advocate of passive income and dividends, so I'm excited.
Love, that is music to our ears, Tim. Music. First, let's get a sense of the overview of the market. How far do you think the Fed will go, and what are you expecting for markets? Is a Fed pivot an overstatement, Tim?
Yeah, well, I think that whole phrase pivot has just been flogged to death in terms of its use in the financial community. I mean, I think there's also a bit of a misunderstanding whether the pivot is a pause at higher levels. And I think that now is quite clear that there is going to be a pause at some point, or the pivot is we're going to start cutting rates, in the second half of 2023, which a lot of analysts are expecting, right? Which I think is quite optimistic. The labor market, as we've seen, even with the latest jobs number last Friday, was still pretty strong. It's slowing. But wage growth is still pretty healthy, and it still makes up a pretty hefty chunk of core CPI, like core inflation. So I think for that to continue to, that has to really continue to slow. And I think for most, the expectation in the market is that there's going to be a mild recession, and then the Fed is going to pivot and start cutting rates into the second half of 2023 and into maybe or early 2024. And I think that's really optimistic given where we are with earnings expectations, forward earnings expectations. Consensus is still looking at growth this year, which is quite surprising. So I think if you look at the chart of forward earnings expectations from analysts versus the S&P over, say, the past 20 or 30 years, there's about a 93% correlation, right? So earnings expectations tend to lag a little bit in terms of the market, and the market's already dropped, about 20% last year in 2022, and earnings expectations only come down a few percent. So I think it's really going to have to continue to come down. And if we do get a slowdown and a recession, the average sort of earnings recession or earnings drop is around 20% if you're looking at recession earnings drop, right? So we haven't really had that yet at all. So there's a lot of talk about this time, it could be different. But if you look back in history and see the past recessions and the earnings declines that you tend to see, it tends to be pretty painful. And last year, ex energy, I think in the last two quarters, earnings growth was negative. So we're already starting to go into negative earnings growth if we take out energy. And so I think it's got further to go in terms of earnings. So I'm looking forward to the fourth quarter earnings that are going to be coming out at the end of this month and in February, because I think that will show investors a clearer picture of what's to come.
Yeah, eyes out on those results as well from us on our side. Now, when we talk about dividend investing in this current environment, let's clarify what we mean. We know there's a host of different listeners with different types of experience in the investment world. So when we talk about dividend investing, should we look beyond dividends when we're choosing dividend stocks? What are the key metrics that you think about when you think of dividend stocks?
I think I tend to view them as two distinct, I break dividends down into two distinct sort of groups, right? I think you've got your dividend yielders, which are what I would consider, REITs and banks. They're higher yielding, so they would maybe yield upwards of 4.5, 5%. I mean, in this environment, they're yielding 6 or 7, as you can see with some of the REITs here. But they tend to grow their dividends at a very low, sort of slow pace. So say maybe like a few percent per year, or maybe less than 5%, right? So you're talking quite slow growth of that dividend if you stretch it out long term. If you think about dividend growth, that's the other group. I tend to think of those companies that are growing their dividend pretty fast. So 10%, 15%, sometimes even upwards of 20% on a compounded basis over maybe a decade or 15 years. But they yield quite low, right? So they're yielding maybe 1.5 to 2.5%. And so that doesn't tend to excite traditional dividend investors, because if you think of a dividend, a lot of people tend to focus on the yield. But I think if you're a long-term investor and you've got a bit more of a runway and you're young, maybe you're still in your 30s or 40s, and you're not going to retire for the next 20 years, 25, 30 years, I think you should be focusing on the latter group, right? The ones that can grow the dividend faster and sustainably, rather than thinking about the dividend yielders. If you're retired and you need that passive income immediately, then I think that's more suitable for older investors. But if you're thinking about generating a passive income and trying to grow that and compound that dividend over the long term, then I think it makes sense, complete sense, if you're, you know, below sort of 45, even below 50, and you're thinking you're going to retire maybe in your 70s. Nowadays, we're stretching out the time that we need to end up retiring. Then I think dividend growth is really the key, because if you think about the amount of the dividend that you'll receive in maybe 10 or 15 years time, if you compound that out on a maybe 15% compounded basis, that will continue to compound and grow for you. And so I think it's important to differentiate between dividend yield and dividend growth.
Okay, so when you talk about Lowe's, and that is first on your stocks to watch list, Lowe's is an American retail company and they specialize in home improvement. Which of those two categories does Lowe's fall into?
That actually falls into dividend growth. So that's much more of a focus on growing the dividend. It actually yields around 1.5 to sort of 2%. Home improvement is a really fragmented market in the US. I think the total addressable market is around, you know, it's pegged at around 900 billion. So it's big in terms of the amount of addressable market for Lowe's to take market share from. And I think Home Depot is the leader, but Lowe's is number two, and even Home Depot only has about maybe 10 to 15% market share. So it's a very fragmented market, and there's still a lot of room for growth. And if you think about US homes, they're actually quite old. Housing stock on average is around 40 years old. So there's always either need for new homes, which, you know, you'll see pro contractors go out and use home improvement stores like Home Depot or Lowe's. Or people just doing their own improvements on their home, right? And if you're looking at home prices right now, even though there's a housing slowdown and housing transactions are falling, that doesn't mean that spending is falling at Lowe's or Home Depot, because people are still spending to improve their home. Maybe they're not moving and they're not buying a new home, but they're going to stay in their home maybe for the next few years and decide, I want to make this more, you know, a nicer place to live. So I'm going to spruce it up, or I'm going to get a contractor in to do some work. So I think there's still a spending aspect to the home in the US. And Lowe's particularly, what they've done is they've been able to sort of, they've been more focused on the do-it-yourself, so DIY, so the DIY consumer. And a lot of professional investors actually prefer Home Depot because they focus on the pros. So they're like the contractors, and they're a bit more reliable in terms of their spend and more regular. But Lowe's has actually done better on a five-year basis, past 5 years versus Home Depot. And they actually are growing their dividend at sort of around 20% over the past, you know, 15 years or so on a compounded basis. So every year is around 20%. The last raise, which was, I think last May, was around 30%, right? So they raised the dividend 30% from the prior year. And so investors can probably expect another dividend hike this upcoming May. And the good thing about dividend growers is they tend to have a low payout ratio, right? So if you think about earnings per share, I mean, it's pretty basic maths, right? It's just dividend per share divided by earnings per share times 100. And you'll get the percentage of the payout ratio. And that means you want a lower payout ratio if you're thinking about growth, because it gives you more of a ceiling and more headroom for the company to be able to grow the dividend. So in Lowe's case, their payout ratio is around 25 to 30%. So it's very low. And ideally you want a payout ratio, you know, in anywhere from 20 to 60%. And so I think Lowe's really has the wherewithal and the growth and the continued expertise at its helm to continue to grow the dividend Even if we head into a mild recession, even if we head into a recession, they will have, and they take an earnings hit, maybe they took an earnings hit of 10, 15%. That doesn't actually mean they can't continue to grow that dividend. So I think it's important to differentiate between something like that, a 25% payout ratio, between that and a REIT, right? A REIT has a 90% because they're required by law to pay out 90%. So any drop in rentals or any drop in or any increase in cost of capital, as we saw last year, the dividend per share or the DPU, dividend distribution per unit for REITs, they tend to fall a little bit, which they have fallen. And if you're relying on that income, that's not ideal. And if you've got that and you want to compound that over time, that's not ideal either. You don't want a company or, you know, a REIT to cut its dividend or cut its distribution. And so the key is to continue to look for companies that can grow it continually over time. And the US has a lot. And, you know, in Asia, there are many options as well.
Fascinating. Lowe's. From Lowe's, we move to America's largest capital investor in infrastructure. Next,
yes.
Era Energy, a premier clean energy yep. leader. And I know you're on your list has been providers yes. of wind and solar energy, but why NextEra as a dividend?
Well, I think NextEra, yeah, NextEra Energy is just a leader in that space. I think much like Lowe's and even Home Depot, its peer, it's, you know, they're the ones that lead, that the leaders are the ones that can continue to access capital at a lower cost versus its peers. It can continue to invest into new projects, into new infrastructure. I mean, we've seen the numbers about the, you know, capital outlay that's required for clean energy and this transition to net zero. It's something ridiculous, like $50 trillion or something. I mean, but the amount that is, we're just at the start of this transition, right? So I think yeah. the amount that's needed is mind-boggling. And really, you're going to need companies that are big, that have that capacity to deploy capital and have the mm-hmm. capacity to raise capital at lower price, at lower cost, right? And NextEra Energy is really one of those leaders. It's managed to grow its dividend at around 10%. So it's not a super, super, you know, it's not growing 20%, 25%, but it's very steady. It's very stable. You know, last year, I think it was down maybe 10% or so. So it outperformed the S&P. It's a utility. So it owns Florida Power and Light, FPL, which is a utility in Florida, which gives it really stable income streams and cash flow. And then it has NextEra Energy Resources, which is its clean energy arm. And that owns things like NextEra Energy Partners, which is a subsidiary, a yield co that it throws off cash. It owns clean operating assets, clean energy operating assets like wind, solar, and a couple of natural gas pipelines. And what it does is it continues to invest into new projects, right? So it continues, it thinks it's going to, estimates it's going to invest in CapEx around $85 to $95 billion through 2025. It tends to also set targets in terms of earnings per share and dividend per share, you know, in the next 2 or 3 years. So up to 2025, NextEra Energy is saying it will be able to grow its dividend per share by 10% through 2025. So for the next 2 to 3 years. And in the past, it's done that and it's hit the upper end of its target every time. So mm-hmm. management really knows its business well. Jim Robo, who used to be CEO, he retired recently and he really led that transition from NextEra into sort of this clean energy renewables giant. And currently, you know, it's the largest renewable energy listed player in the world. And its market cap is, you know, north of 100, 120, 130 billion. So it's a big, big, big company. And it's continued to grow its dividend really steadily. It continues to pay that off, but it yields a bit lower, right? It yields around 2%, 2.5%. But its subsidiary, NextEra Energy Partners, is a yield co. And that is something that, but they own clean energy operating assets. So they're quite a pure play on just owning assets. And they continue to get drop downs from the parent, from NextEra Energy, at a preferable rate. And then they continue to sell that clean power on to either corporates or to, you know, it on in terms of like power plans that are like long-term. And mm-hmm. so they tend to be locked in. They tend to be CPI protected. And so they're CPI linked rather. So they go up with inflation. So both NextEra Energy and its subsidiary, you know, they own real assets that are in a way inflation protected. They continue to generate income and they continue to throw off cash and they can give that back to shareholders, which is at the end of the day, which is what you want, right? You want money in your pocket and you want dividends.
NextEra Energy, current dividend yield, 2.02%. Thanks, Tim. Let's move on to John Deere on your list. Is it Deere and Company?
Yeah, Deere. So Deere is a John Deere is, the largest sort of agricultural equipment company in the world, one of the largest. I mean, we've kind of seen it, right? It's got the tractors, it's got a lot of the construction machinery. And I think it's really come into its own in the past couple of years with it's become more relevant, maybe. It's a really staid company traditionally. It's viewed as something that serves like the rural the rural community, the rural
Construction,
construction,
forestry,
yeah, like a lot of tractors,
communities.
crop yields. But I think one of the benefits of this company is that it's going to really become one of the beneficiaries of tech, right, in the next decade. So in the past decade, we've had the FANGs, and you've had the rise of Facebook or Meta and Google and Amazon, Netflix, and they've really been online focused, and they've just really been all about the tech, and that's benefited their consumers, and that's benefited the company's share prices, obviously. So I think the next decade is more about how's technology going to feed through into other companies and other sectors, right? And still, there's a lot of industries in the US and globally that are not really using or leveraging tech as well as they could. And farming is one of those companies, one of those areas, right? It's traditionally a bit more old school. And so you're looking at tractors that are now going to be sort of autonomous and driverless. And so they've started to market that, and they can take data from these from crop yields. They can understand where farmers have sprayed using geospatial sort of mapping. And so they've recently partnered with a satellite company to improve this geospatial mapping for their tractors and for farmers. And if we've seen with the food crisis last year in Ukraine and Russia with the war, I think agriculture is one of those areas that is really going to be a focus over the next 5, 10 years. Food security, increasing crop yields, trying to feed a bigger and bigger global population. And so farming and agriculture is really one of those areas that is going to take front and center, I think, with policymakers, and also in terms of tech, right? Because you need to leverage technology, you need to deploy technology to really improve crop yields, to really help boost production in food crops, and to raise yields that you need, that are on farmland currently. And so with farmers, they on the whole tend to use John Deere tractors. They tend to use John Deere equipment in terms of growing food. And so even though sort of fertilizer and maybe potash prices are coming down, that's going to mean farmers are going to have more money to spend over the next few years, and hopefully that should be good for John Deere. And John Deere has paid a relatively stable dividend. I mean, it's been growing at around maybe 10 to 15% over the past 10 years. Over the past 5 years, it's grown around 20%, and it has a very low payout ratio. I think it pays out around 25% of its earnings, 25 to 30% of earnings per share in terms of its dividend. And it's yielding a lower amount. I think what we discussed, maybe what I'm more focused on, is dividend growth. I'm very happy to discuss maybe ones that are a bit higher yielding, because I know maybe some listeners want to think about immediate income, immediate yield. But I'm thinking more about the sustainability of the dividend, and the potential for that dividend to continue growing, for decades, not just for the next couple of years.
Yeah, so dividend yield about 1.12%, right? For Deere & Company currently. But you're talking about a major trend. I mean, this is about technology that's going to impact the world's population, feeding the world's population, fueling the world's population, more efficient, sustainable, and smarter ways of doing that. And this is a company on the forefront of that.
Definitely, definitely, yeah. Earnings per share last year grew at around 23% in fiscal 2022. And so that was a pretty phenomenal phenomenal growth rate if you consider the backdrop that it was operating in.
All right, we're going to stay on farmland, aren't we, Tim? Next up, we're looking at tractor supply. Why are we looking at tractor supply? Dividend yield 1.66%.
Well, tractor supply again is one of those that we don't really think about. Has nothing to do with tractors, by the way. Its name is tractors, so it's the opposite of John Deere. John Deere sells tractors, doesn't have tractor in its name. Tractor Supply doesn't sell tractors, and it's got tractor in its name. So what it serves is more of the rural consumer. So it's a bit more focused on the people living in small towns in rural America. It's very much a US focused story. And in a same sense as maybe like a Target or the Home Depot, you don't really serve the Home Depot, rather like a Walmart or a Target. It serves its base quite well. You know, it's looking at
Farm
rural
supplies and
farming
animal feed,
supplies, yeah, maybe like pet
clothes and
foods, other
tools.
things like that.
You can't walk in
And
and buy a
it's,
tractor. Okay, got it.
yeah, and the good thing about tractor supply is, you know, it's relatively early in its digital transformation transition, right? So it's starting to utilize online ordering more. It's starting to really build
Wow.
up its capabilities in online and digital. And so what they've managed to do is really tap into the sort of tap into the rural market, rural consumer market, and really own that market. And they've grown their dividend at upwards of sort of like 20% over the past 10 years on a compounded basis. And
Wow.
it's really well run company. You know, it's got really strong capital management. The management team also is really has been really stable, really strong. And it's a company that I think many people don't really know about or don't really
Yeah.
think about. But it's one of those, if you think about the dividend in sort of 10, 15, 20 years' time, you could easily see it continuing to expand, right? But obviously off a low base. I think that's the key. If you're thinking about long-term growth of a dividend, you want it to come off a low base. You don't want a
Absolutely.
company that has a dividend payout ratio of 90% or, you know, 100% or is paying out more in dividends than it's earning. It's just not sustainable. So for me, again, it's got a lower payout ratio. It has a sustainable dividend. It's grown it very fast. So I think if you're looking at, you know, another year of volatility in the market, but being able to raise that dividend, Tractor Supply, you know, along with all these other companies, I think should be able to raise its dividend comfortably.
Impressive sales growth, expanded to more than 2,000 locations, and it's been able for the past 12 years to raise its dividends. And you see this as sustainable at
That's
this point.
sustainable. Certainly, certainly, yeah, definitely. I think it's a really, again, a leader in its niche.
All right, and finally, we take a look at one of the world's leading providers of investment advisory and risk management solutions, and that is BlackRock. It makes Tim Phillips' list of dividend stocks to watch for this year.
Yeah, so I
Why
mean,
is
it's
that?
involved in the financial space. It's one of the leaders. I actually happened to read an interesting article in the FT the other day, looking at, I guess the leading ETFs for the S&P 500. And I think over the past sort of 40 years, like the SPDR, the SPY from State Street has been the leader, right? I think it was one of the first ETFs that launched, and it's got the biggest AUM out of the three. So if you think about Vanguard's, the iShares one, which is BlackRock, and then also SPY, SPY. SPY is the biggest. But if you look at last year's flows, the outflows, there was actually negative flows from the SPY. So money actually came out of that. But there were positive inflows into Vanguard's, which is VOO, VOO, and the iShares one, right? So in terms of the narrative, I think it really speaks to, it's a little bit more of a good allegory to the growth of iShares and its you know, its appeal, I guess, globally is that it has a lower expense ratio than the SPY, along with Vanguard's one as well. I think it's 0.03% and the SPY is 0.08 or 0.1. And so 5 basis points in this world of low cost, nearly virtually zero cost investing for ETFs is a lot, right? And so I think you're starting to see people realize, hey, if I can save 5 basis points and it's exactly the same product and it's just got bigger scale, why not put it into iShares or into Vanguard? And so BlackRock has been really good at growing that business. It's really managed to make iShares just a giant in that space. And I don't think passive investing is going anywhere. You see a lot of people saying, oh yeah, you know, it's return to alpha investing and you know, people, you're going to be able to generate alpha if you pick in this environment. But the amount of inflows into passive investment vehicles over the past sort of 10, 15 years, I don't think is going to reverse anytime soon. I think it might slow, but I think the trend is towards passive just being a really big part of anyone's portfolio or anyone who doesn't have the time to invest actively, right? And so they've really owned that space. Larry Fink has made a name for themselves as, you know, ESG. I think they've gone into a bit more hot water recently with some controversy there. But I think it's one of those trends that is really going to be around to stay. And so if you think about BlackRock as a owner of assets, AUM, you know, it's I think the largest. It's got trillions under management, over 10 trillion probably under assets under management, and it's just a humongous, you know, it's just a giant. And because it's so big, it's had to develop its own sort of its own management platform and tech platform within itself, which is called Aladdin. And so like Amazon Cloud, like Amazon Web Services, if anyone wasn't aware, you know, Amazon Web Services was actually started to manage Amazon supply chain and Amazon's own retail side of operations. So it actually wasn't something that was sold externally, but it became something that they sold externally to corporates and to everyone else. And so Aladdin is starting to become something like that for BlackRock, right? It's starting to become a digital platform for financial services that is being sold to other financial services firms. And so it's become, you know, an area, I think, of growth for the company as well. Dividend wise, again, it's a relatively low yielding company, but it's been able to grow its dividend at around sort of 12-13% over the past 15 or 16 years on a compounded basis, which I think is impressive. Larry Fink, there might be some suggestions of succession planning, but the management team there is pretty strong. And I think in terms of you know, where the asset management industry is heading, they've really been able to, put their finger to the wind and understand where things are heading. And they've managed to get ahead of the curve and, you know, exploit those opportunities. And I think for anyone who's thinking about a company that is, again, a leader in its space, I think BlackRock is one that flies under the radar. No one thinks, everyone buys BlackRock products, but no one thinks to invest in actual BlackRock shares. So I think it's one of those companies that I find really, really interesting, given its expertise and given its strong track record.
Well, thank you, Tim. In fact, I have a friend from iShares BlackRock who will be joining me tomorrow because I wanted to find out about the growth of what Asia Pac investors are looking at with passive investing.
Yeah.
So I'll ask him about Aladdin. Thanks for that.
No problem.
What a great conversation. Thank you so much for sharing some ideas on dividend investing. More relevant than ever. In 2023.
Thanks for the time. Yeah, thanks for the time, Michelle. I really enjoyed the discussion. So I'm passionate about it. I think it's more important that people just come away with their own style of investing in dividends. I think, you know, some people might like REITs, might like the higher yielding ones, which is great. And not to say that you shouldn't have any, but have a mix and, you know, just, I think, adjust it according to what you are comfortable with. Like, you know, but I think everyone should definitely think about having a dividend portion and dividend growth, especially.
Yeah, but thanks for the nuanced look at what we can include when we think about dividend stocks and looking away from just dividend as a metric. Yeah, that's great.
As a metric. Yeah, definitely. No problem.
All right. That's Tim Phillips, Head of Content and Investment Lead for Prosperous CGSCI MB Securities. Investors, I hope we've given you great fuel for thought today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Money and Me.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.